On Friday, we talked about Russian interference in the Romanian elections, just after we finished recording. Their upcoming elections were cancelled and the past round of presidential elections were annulled. So who is trying to steal the Romanian elections? Russia, the EU, or both? We're going to look at those questions on today's Trumpet World. Who just stole the Romanian elections? On Friday's Week in Review show, we talked about the way that Russia has been caught using TikTok to manipulate public opinion in Romania. Shortly after we finished putting that show together, the Romanian Constitutional Court took the unprecedented step of cancelling the first round that they'd already held of the presidential elections, cancelling the elections that were due to be held that weekend, the second round of those presidential elections, due to that TikTok interference. Now, this has led to a lot of accusations that it is the Romanian authorities themselves, the mainstream, that are stealing the elections. So what is going on here? I think there is value in looking at what is happening on both sides of this situation in Romania. And I think it reveals the clash of two rising empires and the way that democracy is getting trampled on as these two powers fight it out. And to help us do that, I'm joined by Jeremiah Jacques, who focuses on Russia and on Asia. So Jeremiah, can you summarize the situation with how Russia is accused of stealing the Romanian election through TikTok and social media?
Sure, yes. So the voters of Romania, they went to the polls on November 24th for the first round of voting in their presidential election, as you said there, and there was a shock result from this vote. An unknown candidate who is very pro-Russia came out of nowhere, really, and he won. His name is Calin Georgescu, and he got more votes than the well-known candidates, politicians who are spending millions of dollars on their campaigns. And Georgescu had declared $0 in campaign expenditures. So that was, of course, quite a shock, not just for Romanian voters, but really to many people all across the European Union and NATO, since Romania is a member of both of those Western groups. So this was extremely worrying to NATO and the EU leaders because the implications of Georgescu's victory were very clear. You know, he's quite pro-Russia, as I said, and he's anti-Western, and he has some very extreme views. He has praised Romania's fascist and anti-Semitic past, including its alliance with Hitler during World War II. He also dislikes NATO. So his leadership would mean a NATO that would be even more divided and hamstrung, especially when it comes to standing up to Russia. And under his leadership, the EU likewise would be ineffective and more divided as well. So it was a big shock. But as the dust settled on this over the last few weeks, the situation started to become far less mysterious. And a picture emerged that made it clear how this unknown far-right pro-Russia candidate who spent $0 went from polling at about 5% before the election to winning it. And the way this happened was from an audacious Russian operation that made use mostly of TikTok, this social media platform that is indirectly operated by the Chinese Communist Party. And of course, China is allied with Russia. So it should be no surprise that China would allow the Russians to use TikTok in this way. But basically, you had tens of thousands of accounts on TikTok just aggressively pushing Georgescu to Romanian voters. Some of them were giving his posts, his videos, just stunning amounts of likes and comments and other kinds of engagement that really manipulate the algorithm of the platform. And then these pro-Georgescu accounts were also posing as Romanians in many cases and posting many, many videos and things like that on their own, which they would then, you know, they would all help each other to sort of give likes and comments and manipulate the algorithm with these tens of thousands of accounts. And there's evidence now that many of these were actually paid by Russia through a South African company. Many of them accepted a payment of 1,000 euros to post things that just maligned Romania's pro-Europe candidates and that praised Georgescu as sort of the, you know, the answer to all of Romania's problems.
And do we have evidence that funds came from Russia then? Because you're paying influencers. The Biden campaign has done that. That in itself is not particularly unusual. And I think people who've looked at the funds have said, this is the going rate for influencers. Now, we know Georgescu said he didn't use zero funds. So if his campaign did indeed pay TikTok influencers, then he didn't declare that. That would be a lie there. Do we have evidence? Do we know that this money came from Russia? Or do we just have evidence that it was obscure in some way rather than it being paid out as a normal campaign expense? Or do you know what the situation is there?
From what I've seen, it has been traced back to Moscow.
Okay.
through a company based in Moscow, and they indirectly routed these funds through a South African company to obscure the true origins of it. So if that is the case, this would, of course, be in violation of Romanian campaign finance laws and in violation even of TikTok's requirements for political ads that are financed like that to be labeled as such. But at the same time that the Russian operatives were posing as Romanians in many cases and aggressively pushing Georgescu, they were also conducting sophisticated cyber attacks that allowed them to circumvent TikTok's security policies and avoid being labeled as political ads, even though that's exactly what their posts and their comments and all that were. And it worked. You know, it really worked. It played a significant role in Romania's presidential election. It was enough to help this pro-Russia fringe candidate win that first round of voting.
Right, because he didn't take part in the presidential debates. He did not engage in media in the way that a traditional presidential candidate did. Like, his marketing pretty much came so much from TikTok that we can be pretty confident that it was this TikTok that played a difference.
That's right. I believe the evidence is fairly overwhelming here. So the plan did work, but the problem is, in some ways, it worked a little bit too well. You know, it was pretty obvious to many people in Romania that this guy had gone from polling at 5% before all of this inorganic manipulation from Moscow began to suddenly winning. And it was obvious that that there was a lot of manipulation happening. So authorities in Romania and also some outside authorities as well investigated this. And it wasn't hard to see that tens of thousands of fake TikTok accounts had been used and that a lot of undisclosed financing had happened to create this illusion. And eventually, I think it's very telling that TikTok, which is indirectly run by the Chinese Communist Party, they were forced to admit that their security policies had been circumvented and that they had allowed the platform to be essentially commandeered by these pro-Russia fake accounts posing as Romanians in many cases. And Romania's constitutional court ended up annulling the election's first round. But I think it's interesting because even the way this has played out, I think that it is still a victory for Russia. Even though they got caught illegally funding and financing and lying, the fact that the election was annulled and that the Romanian government had to step in this kind of dictatorial way, that casts a lot of doubt on the integrity of the election and of Romania's democracy more broadly. And it makes democracy look weak and ineffective. And of course, by contrast, that makes Russian authoritarianism look better. So it was kind of a can't go wrong strategy for Russia. They were either going to place their man in power or they were going to cast a pall over the entire voting process and help to just demoralize and discourage the voters.
So I think you've painted a very compelling picture that, because there is a lot of pushback online on this narrative of Russia stealing the election, but we know that there were TikTok influencers that were paid. The money goes back to Moscow. We know that TikTok played a decisive role in the election. And then crucially, as you point out, TikTok itself has indicated something untoward was going on by the fact that it has gotten rid of many of these accounts. I think the other, another clinching piece of this that is very compelling is Russia's history of election interference in other countries and the way that they have been caught using similar tactics to try and sway other elections, whether it's referenda about NATO membership or other, or in trying to go against NATO candidates in non-NATO countries, that kind of thing. I mean, what's the backstory of Russia doing this in other places?
Yes, you're exactly right. This is a pattern. This Romanian situation is not at all a one-off. You can look at Moldova, the former Soviet nation of Moldova, for another example of this. Russia controls part of the country there called Transnistria and operates a good-sized military base there. And Putin has been working tirelessly to weaken Moldova's pro-Western government. Last year, he spent some $55 million on local elections just to bribe voters and to illegally finance a pro-Russia party. And then this October, just before Moldova's presidential elections, Moldovan police found that Putin's agents had carried out an extremely brazen vote-buying scheme. They spent about $15 million during this, just in October, apparently, to buy pro-Russia votes. Now, the November 3rd Moldovan election, it ended up not going Putin's way. That was mostly because of Moldovans living abroad who voted for the pro-European government there. But it shows that what happened in Romania is definitely not a one-off. And it showed that Putin remains fiercely determined to bring Moldova back under his power. We can also look at the former Soviet nation of Georgia. Georgia, of course, is the little Caucasus nation there that was under Moscow's control for almost two centuries, first as part of the Russian Empire, then as part of the Soviet Union. But that ended in 1991 after the Soviet Union's dissolution. That's when Georgia achieved independence. And really, Russia has been working ever since then to bring Georgia back under Moscow's control. We saw that very dramatically with the 2008 war, when Russia rolled tanks into Georgia, ended up conquering about a fifth of its territory and making that basically de facto Russian land. And in recent years, Putin has been trying to bring even more of Georgia under his control. And he's working with a man named Bidzina Ivanishvili. Mr. Ivanishvili is the richest man in Georgia, and he made his fortune in Moscow. And he remains closely aligned with the Kremlin and with Putin. And in October's elections, Putin's forces pulled out all of the stops to rig the elections in favor of Ivanishvili's party, the Georgia Dream Party. We've got an article up on thetrumpet.com right now by Peter Van Halteren that does a really good job of going through the intimidation that we saw during this vote from Russian agents, the vote buying, the double voting and the physical violence. There's video evidence embedded in this article that goes through a lot of that. So you can see these hired thugs and provocateurs, just the same old, you know, patterns of intimidation. And there was also a lot of bribery and manipulation before the vote as well. That's well documented. So the scale of the fraud there in Georgia was stunning, but it worked. In this case, it worked. And then, of course, you come to Ukraine, another probably the very best example of this sort of behavior from Vladimir Putin's Russia. So this is another former Soviet nation. And in Ukraine, this has gone on for years. Putin has always tried to install puppets or to keep his puppets in power. You can go all the way back to really 2003, the lead up to the 2004 vote. But he spent a great deal of money to legally and illegally help one of his comrades, a guy named Viktor Yanukovych, get into power. So ahead of this vote, Putin also had the pro-Western candidate poisoned. There was widespread ballot stuffing, illegal mobile voting, and intimidation. And even with all of that, the exit polls still showed a victory for the poisoned pro-European candidate, Yushchenko. But yet, Putin's guy, Yanukovych, was curiously pronounced the winner. And this is what led to the big orange revolution there in 2004 in Ukraine, because the Ukrainians could plainly see that their vote had been stolen. So that's all, you know, 2003, 2004, 2005. And Putin lost, and he was furious. in the lead up to the 2010 Ukrainian election, his agents were more covert and more sophisticated in a lot of ways. There were more pro-Russia media channels operating just in overdrive in Ukraine. They were paid for by Putin's oligarchs, and there were great quantities of money paid to local Ukrainian proxies, various businessmen, to basically buy their votes and to convince them to tell others to get on board the Russian side of things. And then there was a very sophisticated rebranding campaign for Yanukovych. And all of this was enough to get Yanukovych in power. So he won in 2010. And of course, it turned out that he was not independent. You know, he was the same old Russian puppet that he had always been. And in 2013, he very famously betrayed the Ukrainian people by rejecting this landmark association agreement with Europe. So Yanukovych rejected that, and instead he just worked to integrate Ukraine more and more closely with Russia. And this is what prompted the Ukrainian people to rise up against him in the now famous Maidan protests, the pro-democracy Maidan protests. After Yanukovych's government opened fire on some of those protesters, that's when we saw the size of the protests swell to an extraordinary size, and he ended up fleeing the country for Moscow. And after that came one of the most famous instances of Russian election meddling. This is February 2014. Crimea is the big peninsula there at the south of Ukraine, where Russia had and still has a big naval base, and Putin refused to lose it. So he sent in what have been called little green men. These were later confirmed to be Russian special forces, but they were masked and they didn't have any insignia on their uniforms at the time. And then they held a quote unquote referendum about whether the Crimeans wanted to join Russia. You have to put that in scare quotes because this vote happened while Crimea was occupied by these, you know, heavily armed Russian special forces. But it worked. This little green man strategy, it worked. Russia ended up announcing that 97% of Crimeans voted to make the peninsula an official part of Russia. And it was only about a month later that he actually admitted that those little green men were Russian special forces acting under his orders. But then shortly after that is when Russia sent troops into eastern Ukraine, the region called Donbass. And here again, once his forces were in place supporting the pro-Russian militias there, he staged referendums about self-rule. And there's mountains of evidence here, once again, of ballot stuffing, coercion, voter intimidation, pre-filled ballots, and of course, no international observers. You know, so the pattern, it really is undeniable. Putin is a KGB mastermind who rigs votes to accomplish his goals. And I'd like to read a quote here from Trump editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury. This is from our January 2004 edition. So it's going back 20 years here, just after Putin had rigged an election inside of Russia. So this is about an election that he rigged right there inside of his own country. And Mr. Fleury writes, "Putin was shaped and molded by the infamous KGB, Russia's ruthless, murderous secret service arm of the government that was made famous by Joseph Stalin." And then Mr. Fleury writes, "The whole world should be alarmed," end quote. So once again, that was written back in January 2004. And at the time that Mr. Fleury wrote those words, Putin had only been the head of Russia for 4 years. And very few people saw him as a despot in the making or as a threat to the global order. But Mr. Fleury recognized the links between Putin and Stalin. And now I think it's very clear that there is really almost endless evidence that we should have been far more alarmed than we were about Putin all the way back in 2004.
So let me put this to you, though. Okay, Vladimir Putin, I think there's no question he steals his own elections. Russia isn't democratic. But how different is what he does in someone like Moldova or Romania? How different is that to what the West would do? And we know that US intelligence services haven't just had fake accounts, but have had offices inside the headquarters of US social media giants. We know that US social media have orchestrated various different campaigns with social media abroad. We know that America funnels money to civil society groups and political groups that support their geopolitical position in some of these countries. We know that there are groups like, or news outlets like Radio Free Europe that are funded by the United States. Do you think that what Russia is doing here is qualitatively different to what the United States is doing?
I do. I think that the evidence you won't find Americans in Moldova or in Ukraine with guns telling people to vote a certain way.
But we didn't see that in Romania. Like, I completely agree for Ukraine and for an area that's under their control. And I think that is part of at least my answer, I guess. But Romania, say, where you don't have Russian soldiers there.
Okay, well, even in Romania, no one has said that the United States has paid, you know, millions of dollars to people to illegally manipulate TikTok or other platforms to try to rig the vote. We do have soft power campaigns around the world. America, of course, has soft power campaigns around the world. We have publications where we try to let our message be known. I think one big distinction between the Russian version of that and the American version of that is that the US version says countries should have the right to self-determination. And we try to prop up candidates who want to have democracy. They want the people to have a voice. Whereas Russia says we want no self-determination. We want to prop up candidates who will let Russia live the way of Git on a national level and antagonize the world as much as we can. So some of it is just that I believe that the U.S. truly is, you know, of course, a woefully imperfect nation. But if you compare it to a nation like Russia that wants to get, wants to take, it comes not but to steal and kill and to act as a thief, really. I think that the difference there is salient. And I think that America is generally trying to say, let's let countries choose their own path. And so, yeah, there's soft power, but it's to give them self-determination.
I think also it's worth considering, like you said, there is a character at home. You know, Vladimir Putin will kill his political opponents. The United States, that is much less common, quite clearly. Though I think there is a rot in the United States. I think there's no denying that. And you look at the way at home the U.S. deep state has been used to try and influence American elections, and the way that those individuals from intelligence organizations sitting in social media headquarters, they were used in the 2020 elections, for example, to try and oppose Donald Trump. And I think what then happens abroad is reflected by what happens at home. But I also think that there's a level of evil and there's a level of rot or decay in Russia that is on a much higher level than what has happened in the United States. I think there were definitely people at the top who would have loved to have ordered Donald Trump pushed out of a window, for example, in the election campaign in 2020. They didn't do it because they couldn't do it. Like, that things were not that bad that they could get away with it. Whereas it's pretty trivial for Vladimir Putin to defenestrate a political opponent. So I think there's a qualitative difference there in what happens at home. But then and then that plays out in what goes on abroad and to what end. I thought you made a good point. In general, America's goal is to spread democracy, whereas Russia's goal is different. Now, I think there are examples where America has intervened in ways that were perhaps more designed to influence a candidate that is in America's interest than was purely democratic. Like, I think that does happen. I mean, I think even in Britain's history, the way that the United States pushed quite strongly, for example, in the 1970s, this is all because it's 50, 60 years old. I guess 50 years old, it's common knowledge that the CIA was very influential in trying to persuade Britain to vote for UN membership, EU membership in the mid-1970s, because they believed that would be to America's advantage. So yes, America does, I think, influence elections to their advantage. But I do think you have to take into account the character and the motives. And there are qualitative differences. And I think just by saying, we've got to have a more educated view than saying this is bad and this is bad. Like, there are different, what was it? Paul Johnson, in his book Modern Times, said the essence of geopolitics is to distinguish different degrees of evil. This is an evil world. Satan is the god of this world. But we can still distinguish and see, well, there's different levels of evil going on here, and different nations are engaged in that to different ways. But I do think this is where we do need to bring up what is happening in Romania. And I think you look at Russia's history of stealing elections, and then you look at what happened in Romania, and that makes that very compelling. I think you look at European history of intervening in elections, and I think it's also pretty compelling that they don't have democracy as their core motive here either. And I think we could be seeing a very dangerous moment for when the European approach to democracy, which is to say, you got it wrong, try again, has now come to national elections, which we have never seen before. Because this is a trend within Europe where, in 2001, Ireland voted the wrong way on the Nice Treaty that would have given the European Union more power. And so they get told, no, go away, try again. And so in 2002, they do it again, they get it right. 2005, the European Constitution, France and the Netherlands hold referenda. They get it wrong. They rename the EU Constitution the Lisbon Treaty. France and the Netherlands are told, you don't get referendas anymore, or certainly, I think France doesn't get one. Britain, we were promised a referendum on that. Because the name changed, it was, nope, you don't get a referendum. Ireland still has a referendum on it. They reject it. They get told, you got it wrong. Try again. So now, like what we're seeing in Romania, where you voted for someone that we don't like, go away and try again. There is a track record of this. This isn't just a one-off, and it's not something that has only happened in response to Russian interference. And I think as well, it's important to note, like, the accusations are that Russia used TikTok to influence voters. There is no accusations in Romania. Feel free to correct me if you've seen anything different. But as I understand it, there are no accusations of ballot fraud. There are no accusations like that is, by and large, that every single ballot tracks back to something that somebody has genuinely cast. That this is an accurate result of what individuals wanted. Russia is accused of manipulating what those individuals wanted, but the actual voting procedure, no one contends that. And in fact, the Romanian Constitutional Court had a hearing on this and ruled that initially they would not overturn the election because there was no evidence of physical ballot stuffing or anything like that, or bribes or ballot purchases. And it was several days later that they came and overruled the election because of some of these other things that went on. And I think, you know, this is a dangerously low bar for redoing an election. Yes, there were irregularities, but we live in the world where campaign finance laws are extraordinarily complicated. And I think in Britain and America, just about every election campaign, people get fined for breaking campaign finance violations. And we have this debate. If it's your guy, it's an honest mistake. They mistook a box on the form. If it's the opponent, it's signs of corruption. That's kind of how it's looked upon. But it happens so often. And I think it's because the campaign finance laws are extraordinarily complicated. We saw this with the Brexit referendum, where accusations of Russian interference and accusations of campaign finance fraud were used by people to try and say, no, we need to redo the Brexit referendum. And in fact, I think it was Darren Grimes, one commentator, one activist in particular, who was dragged through the court through selective prosecution on campaign finance violations, where, you know, he called up the Electoral Commission and say, how do I do this legally? They told him he did it. The Electoral Commission then decided they made a mistake when they gave that advice and they prosecuted him. So this has been a tool. And we've seen Barack Obama be fined for campaign finance violations. We've seen Hillary Clinton fined for campaign. So if not properly declaring your campaign finances is enough to redo an election, and if this Romanian candidate improperly funded social media activists, you can redo any election. That, in fact, was the conclusion of Boris Kalnoki, the head of media school at the Matthias Corvinus Collegium in Hungary, where he said Romania's constitutional court's reasoning for cancelling the presidential election, algorithms, influences, hidden campaign financing. With such reasoning, every democratic election in the digital era could be cancelled if authorities don't like the outcome. So I think that is where we are potentially headed. With Europe has this track record of saying, no, you got it wrong, redo it. And now they're doing it in a national election. How many other times do they redo it? I mean, Poland, in the wake of this, changed which body certifies their elections. Because Poland is very polarized between a pro-EU party and an anti-EU party. And the pro-EU party has shifted it now to a group that they have more control over. So I think we're going to see who certifies an election and who decides whether an election is redone or not. Like, it feels like from here on out, that is where we're going to go for European elections. And we'll have court cases and we'll have courts ruling on these issues. I think you see it in the way that the European Union intervened in Poland's election last year. And like I said, I think this, yes, you've laid out very compelling evidence that Russia was stealing this election. And I'm not pretending to know the correct response to that. But I think you look at Europe's track record of stealing elections, I mean, you look at what they did in Poland, where the EU came along and said, we're fining you 1 million euros per day, the heaviest penalty ever, accusing the Polish government of interfering in the judiciary. You got a new government in and they lifted the fine. The new government did not do anything. Like, in theory, this is meant to be a legal mechanism of you passed a law that is incompatible with the European Union treaties, and we're going to fine you until you're back in compliance with the EU treaties. Poland just voted for a different party. They made no changes and they lifted the fine. So it was a fine for having a government that the EU disapproved of. So I think we've been seeing as well the European Union get more and more involved in manipulating elections. And I think we see them do it in different ways. Just as we see the United States intervening in elections in maybe a different ways to Russia. And it's through European level court fines rather, and it's through civic society groups, and it's through the European Union funnels vast amounts of money to NGOs. They have a huge NGO network all over the world that is putting out a pro-EU message because they know which side their bread is buttered on. And if Russia did the same thing, we would be calling foul and corruption, but we don't do it for the European Union. We have this tendency to pick a good guy. There's a good guy and a bad guy, and I'm supporting this side and I'm opposed to this side. And I think what we're seeing in Romania is that is too simplistic. And what you're having is democracy itself just being crushed in this competition. And I think what we're seeing is just democracy itself is very fragile. And we've seen this in the United States. You know, this is the story of the last 8 years of US politics, where when society becomes so polarized that you've got people saying the other guy is literally Hitler, and actually it is worth bending and breaking the rules to keep that guy out of power, it is very hard for democracy to survive at all. And now in Europe, when you've got both sides, both the EU and even NATO to a certain extent, and you've got Russia, and both sides are saying, well, we're going to go in there and we're going to manipulate the rules to get what we want. How do you have democracy survive in that kind of an environment?
I think you make an excellent point about this. And that's why I say that, in a way, the situation in Romania was a can't lose for Russia. Mm-hmm. Best case scenario was that they would prop up the man who was aligned with Russian interests and against NATO and against the EU. But even the worst case scenario, which, if their subterfuge and manipulation were discovered, they end up casting a big pall over democracy. They end up exposing it for very weak and ineffective, and they expose the EU as more dictatorial than the European Union would like to be seen as. But I fully agree that this European response to this with the courts and so much of what we've seen with the EU, you know, pushing for another vote until they get the results that they wanted, all of this makes democracy look weak and ineffective, and by contrast, it makes Russia's model of authoritarianism look superior. So it's difficult to know what all the, you know, which is worse in this situation, the Russians or the Europeans. But it is clear that Russia, I think, benefits from even the fact that we're having to ask that question.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And perhaps that's Russia's biggest own goal. Like, I think at the moment, they do believe that if democracy loses, they win, because Vladimir Putin derives a lot of power ideologically from kind of leading the world in the strongman direction. And this is even, I think, part of why he backs Assad. There's geopolitical reasons as well. But he kind of is the anti-democratic figurehead. And so if democracy is defeated, he sees himself as winning. Now, we also are watching for the rise of a strong leader in Europe. And we're watching in a whole number, like we're seeing democracy fail to produce strong leaders in Europe. We're seeing society become more polarized, which makes it even harder for a strong kind of leader to emerge from democracy. We're seeing Europe surrounded by these different crises. We're seeing them, you know, surrounded and under attack in many ways from an aggressive Russia. We're seeing Syria fall apart and threaten to send even more refugees into Europe. Putin looks pretty attractive in a lot of ways to Europe. And then if democracy is discredited, he looks all the more attractive, because if democracy loses that moral high ground and it is no longer seen as a morally superior form of government, then it doesn't feel like as much of a compromise to get rid of that in the name of strong leadership. So all of this, I think, is leading to the rise of this strong leader in Europe that we have been waiting for. And those that would like that kind of leadership, I think they kind of perhaps see what Russia's doing as a win as well. But that dramatically changes Europe. When you have a strong leader in charge of Europe, you know, that builds up Europe to be quite an aggressive rival to Russia, and one who does a whole lot of damage to Vladimir Putin. So I think in discrediting democracy, he's also paving the way for a whole lot of pain for himself here. And I think this is where Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry has an article, World Leaders Who No Longer Have a Human Mind, that just excellently describes the world that we're heading into. That the Book of Daniel, that describes this, the rise of this strongman, it describes leaders with the heart of a beast. And Mr. Flurry says they don't even respond like humans anymore. They're just so aggressive, so selfish, so self-interested, and so lacking in any moral restraints as they pursue that self-interest, that they are beast-like. And what Mr. Flurry writes in there, these beastly leaders and beastly empires clashing and crushing millions of billions of people is a horrific end to mankind's rebellion against God. And I think in a lot of ways, this is what we're seeing a small foretaste of in Romania and even beyond in Eastern Europe. As we're seeing this beast power rising in Europe and we see a world leader with a beast's heart already in Russia, we're starting to see people get crushed between the two. And we're starting to see democracy get crushed between the two. And dark money and dark funds, whether it's from the deep state in the United States, whether it's from the European Union, and then certainly, I think, very more, certainly nakedly and less disguised from Vladimir Putin's Russia, it is all leading to people getting crushed. So we're watching the rise of these strongmen, the rise of these men with a beast's heart that Mr. Flurry describes. And as Mr. Flurry, though, talks about in that article, you know, this ends, though, with the return of Jesus Christ. This is a key moment, the rise of this times of the Gentiles, the rise of all of these beastly-like leaders. That is what we're leading to. And Mr. Flurry writes, we are deep into the times of the Gentiles already. You can see it happening. You look at Iran, look at Europe especially, and at Asia. And he says, and the power and armaments and weapons that are proliferating on earth truly should make the reality of Christ's warning very real to us. So I think democracy is kind of, that time is coming to an end. And we're into the time of these beasts. That's what is, I think, on display here. And really, The good news, though, is that that is leading very directly to the return of Jesus Christ. He's going to have to come in and bring peace to a world that is full of these clashing beasts with people being trampled underfoot. That article, World Leaders Who No Longer Have the Mind of a Beast, that was from the October 2023 Trumpet print edition. It's just a very profound article, and we'll put a link to that in our show notes. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jeremiah. I think it's a couple of really interesting discussions that we've been able to have with you and then with Mihailo earlier.
Thanks very much for having me.
And thank you to Isaac Lorenz and George Haddad for engineering and production. We'll be back on Friday with our regular Week in Review show. And until then, keep watching your world.